Welcome back to the Firestarter Podcast, episode 22 of the 2019-20 NHL season. I'm Ryan Dietrich, alongside Brendan Parker, Tori Peterson, Alex Medina, and joining us today, a three-time Olympian, seven-time World Championship veteran, and current Flames color analyst on Sportsnet, Cassie Campbell-Pascal. How's it going, Cassie?
Good. How's everybody doing? I asked you sort of off-air, are you surviving? I'm just surviving. I can't wait for hockey to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of, we kind of do a little roundtable off the top every week. And I think we're running out of stories about what's new in our lives, but surviving definitely. I do ask everybody this week, so I've got to continue the tradition, of course. Let's check in with how the team's doing. Brendan Parker, switching it up this week, not in the makeshift Flames TV studio. It looks like you're enjoying the great outdoors. Good call. How's it going?
Yeah, I think anytime the sun's shining, I'm just going to try and take it outside. And as I mentioned just off the air, it is now the quietest place in my house because, that house is busy. So outside, wind, I'll take over, in this case, a crying baby.
Well, that always made for an interesting backdrop, so we appreciate it. That's awesome. Tori Peterson, looks like you're back in, well, I was going to say back in Alberta. You're back in Calgary now, is that right?
Yeah, I drove back on Sunday. I think the family had enough of me. I just kind of weaved my way in there, and they had to adjust to me being there while they had their routines and schedules, and I just barged in. But it's nice to be home, and I came back right when the weather's nice, so can't complain.
Yeah, right on. And speaking of, well, I was not in so much enjoying the weather, but you're enjoying the four walls of your living space. Alex, it looks like you haven't seen the sun in a few days. How's it going, buddy?
Well, you know, when you're on a gaming grind, then I
know. I was going to break out the chirps early, right?
See, I already knew you were going to bring it up. And again, I'm still waiting, people. I am still waiting for Ryan Dietrich to play me in NHL 20. He told me it was going to happen last weekend. Still nothing. Sent him a friend request on PSN. Still nothing. Like, I'm almost just tempted to just give up at this point. Just take the win as forfeit from Ryan.
Well, I don't know about that. That's we didn't decide on forfeiture rules or anything of that nature. I will admit I did bail on you. The mountains were beckoning, so I made a few trips out to my favorite place on earth instead of staying inside playing video games. For the record, my PlayStation is unplugged. You know I've switched over to Xbox, but I'll come back at least for one night only or something like that. We'll make it a big deal on Twitch. That's what's new. I can't wait. It's going to be fun no matter what. Guys, always great to see your smiling faces. I know that doesn't come across very well in podcast form, but as the host, I can see it. I love it. And things are a little bit more positive around here nowadays. We had some good news in the NHL this week. Still, obviously, a long, long way to go before we see game action again, but a step in the right direction with the NHL announcing its return to play format. 24 teams involved. The Flames would obviously be playing the Winnipeg Jets in the qualifying round to advance officially to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Lots to chew on, but Brendan, first, just curious your thoughts on what you took out of some of the press conferences with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, and as well being able to catch up with a few members of the Flames yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't help but feel a little bit excited about prospect of what we heard over the last couple of days, first with Gary on Tuesday and then members of the Calgary Flames yesterday. And I think, you know, Brad Treliving kind of put it best when you talk about all of the news kind of rolled up into one. Some of it we had heard before. Some of it became official for the first time. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a plan that's in place that can continue hockey at some point, a date we don't know yet. And while we all know that there's a lot of questions that are still out there in terms of how it's going to look and the logistics of it and when it's going to happen, a lot of important questions, I don't think you can take anything but a little bit of optimism that there is something in place that can continue the game of hockey and finish off a season, award a Stanley Cup this year. I think that's the most important part that I took out of it. And you can't help but feel kind of a little extra motivation, a little excitement about at least having something to look forward to.
So, Cassie, I'm curious for your thoughts on this because this is a unique situation, obviously. By the time we're talking games again, given their best case scenario format, we're looking at July, potentially even August. From a player standpoint, you're talking about ramping up physically. This is longer than your typical offseason would be at this point. And the difference being many of these players haven't even had a chance to be on the ice. How difficult do you think it's going to be for guys to be able to get back up to speed on the physical side, but also mentally? How do you get yourself back in the game after such a long time off?
Well, I think mentally it's kind of easier, other than it's just an unusual time of year. I mean, you're not used to playing hockey in the summertime, you know, other than just training. But I think the physical aspect of it, because not only are they coming back to play, but they're coming back to play in arguably the most intense time of the year, in the most unintense time of the year. So I think for the guys that have stayed in shape, which, I mean, nowadays the training's so different. They really don't even allow themselves to get out of shape. I think it's just going to be tough physically to all of a sudden, bam, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. And there's no sort of season beforehand. There's no sort of lead up games that, you know, you might see a couple little preseason version games, or you might see some inter squad stuff in practices, but nothing's going to mimic the intensity that they're going to face in the playoffs. And I'm just curious to see the difference between that first round, if you will, to the second round. And I'm curious to see those teams that are getting the bye, how they adjust to a team that's just played an intense playoff series, if you will. So, you know, I think there's a lot of disadvantages and advantages to the whole procedure, but I think every team's facing it. And as a player, I think they're chomping at the bit to get back. And it's not ideal. And it's not, you know, you're playing in July, August, September, and then maybe starting a season again. But I think they want to play for a Stanley Cup, and they want to come back. And I think they're going to be as ready as possible.
And again, in the mind of a competitor, just from your experiences too, these guys have already gone through, some of them, as many as 72 games already at this point. That's a lot of work and many months of work put in to get to that point. I'm sure as a competitor, in addition to the fact that you do have an opportunity to win the cup at all, you've already put in the work to say, hey, we have an opportunity to get there. You want to see it through. Have you ever been in a situation where you've kind of gotten close to the end and you kind of see it, but you just haven't been able to? Can you sort of relate to what that experience is like for these guys?
Yeah, you know, we had a world championship canceled in 2003 because of SARS. So, you know, you train all year and you play all year. And, you know, just prior to the Worlds, we play for our club team championship. So, you know, we got through that. And then all of a sudden, you know, the pinnacle of women's hockey, if you will, was canceled. And the girls faced it this year as well, where their world championships was canceled. It was one of the first tournaments canceled. And it's devastating, you know, because you work all year and you set goals and you sort of have a plan in place. And, you know, even, you know, for the management staff of the Flames, I mean, they have a step process and a, you know, where they want to go and what they want to do. And then all of a sudden it's just halted, and you're sitting there and you're kind of like, okay, now what? How do I regain the motivation again to start training for the next season? And I think the luxury that the NHL players have is they're not canceling this season, that they are going to, you know, now that you have a chance to win the Stanley Cup if you're one of those 24 teams. And so that becomes your instant focus. And so in that sense, they know it's not canceled as of yet. I mean, I guess there's still that possibility. But right now, your mindset as an athlete is, hey, we're given a chance here to be in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I'm going to try and take advantage of it as much as I can. And if you look at it, all these teams and all these players are probably going to be the most rested they've ever been heading into the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's a scenario that as an athlete, you would die to have, going into the most intense moment of the season and being the freshest as possible.
So it's interesting. You kind of touched on it a little bit there too, about how the circumstances change over the course of time, and you expect that we're going to finish it. And Brad Treliving has sort of used the analogy several times now that you make a plan to go camping next weekend, but of course, if it rains, you might not be going. So all you can do is plan for the eventual, you know, things working out for the best. But, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to a couple of the players. Milan Lucic on Tuesday night especially was really focused on some of the medical, the health and safety procedures that need to be answered before we actually get the go for launch sequence, I guess. You know, it's interesting. We don't know a whole lot of what the concerns are from the player side, and we're going to learn more as we go here, but we're getting more information by the day, and it's going to be interesting to see how the players respond to some of the real life aspects to it, being away from your family, and how are you going to keep everybody safe. But presumably, if we get back, it hasn't been confirmed, but we assume we're going to be playing in front of no fans. Brendan, I'm curious to see what your thoughts are about players playing in that environment. How do you think they're going to react to it, number one, and how do you think the coverage from our standpoint changes?
Oh, I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see what that intensity, what that feels like. I was talking to a couple of people yesterday about, I mean, we can all agree that the intensity of playoff hockey and, you know, Olympic hockey or whatever it may be, when you get to that highest level, is unlike anything you see. And I think that it'll still be there, but because of the circumstances, it'll feel completely different. And that's something I'm interested to see, you know, sort of how players handle it, how it looks on television, how, you know, Hockey Night in Canada, how everybody chooses to kind of cover that as well from a broadcast standpoint. We talked about technology, and I know, you know, that'll be a big part of it, but it's that feeling, that intensity feeling. And, you know, a lot of it does come from the crowd and the fans, you know, that atmosphere that's created at the start of games, after goals, all of those big moments. How does that feel, even though the intensity is still there, the competition's still there, how does it feel without fans? I don't think we can know until we see it in person or see it on TV, but it is fascinating. And I think Mark Giordano said it yesterday, from a competition standpoint, you could be playing, and he said it, you know, rec hockey on your driveway, whatever it may be, if you're in competition, you're competitive. That'll never be replaced. It'll always be there, but it's the feeling of that intensity and that competition is how it's going to be conveyed is the part that we don't know yet.
Well, and there's been a ton of this asterisk talk over the last few weeks, right? About the fact that you're returning in these unusual circumstances, have that actually puts a damper on a potential Stanley Cup victory. I mean, again, going back to what Giordano said, this is without a doubt, I would think, one of the most difficult Stanley Cups to ever win, because for all intents and purposes, you've got to win 5 rounds now instead of 4. And that is interesting because Gio, one of the things he said is, well, we wouldn't want it any other way. That's exactly how you want it. And he's a guy who's, you know, admittedly getting up there in age and his opportunities are getting less and less, but he doesn't want a Stanley Cup to be handed to him either. So it's kind of a fascinating scenario there. I'm curious, again, we talk about how we're going to, you know, adapt to the coverage side of things, the technology that's going to be involved when it comes back on television. But we've got two sort of social media gurus on the call right now. So I'm curious, we don't know whether or not we're going to be allowed in the building at this point. That's still to be determined and probably will be fleshed out over the next few months. But in your mind, let's make the assumption that we are. How do you think this sort of changes coverage? And I'll open it up to both of you because I'm curious what ideas maybe you have in store to bring this unusual, unprecedented access.
Well, I think the lead up time we're getting to this for not just for social media, but for broadcasters as well, will give us some time for trial and error in terms of what we think will work for coverage. I'm not sure where we would be allowed in the building, if we're even allowed on event level, anything like that. Obviously, that needs to be fleshed out. But all of a sudden, you're tasked with this unique situation that you have to be really creative in. So I think it's an opportunity for us to really expand what we can do with social media. I don't like to look at it as a challenge per se. I don't want to put a negative connotation on it. I think this is a pretty big opportunity for clubs and teams around the world to look at how they cover sports and if there's anything new they can bring to the table. Because as everyone knows here, when you're covering 82 games and then the playoffs, you get in a routine and a rut almost in terms of how you cover things. And oftentimes you just don't have the mental capacity to think outside the box because it's a go, go, go from the start of the season till the end. And then when you finish up and you have the off season, you're just trying to relax and get some vacation time and some mental reprieve from the grind of a season. So I think for us, especially Alex and I, we'll be able to take a look at how we want to cover this once we get a little bit more information on the parameters surrounding club content. Are we even allowed in the building? Are we going to these hub cities? How much can we cover? Are we providing broadcasters with content? All that stuff needs to be worked out over the next couple months, but I think it gives Alex and I an opportunity to bring a new and fresh take on how we cover hockey.
It's funny because you mentioned it, Cassie mentioned it, how for the players, they're coming in the most rested that they'll be. Obviously, Tori and I, we're not playing, but we are coming in rested too, in a sense, because like you said, you kind of get in that rut of the long season. So it really kind of sets the standard too, because it gives us the opportunity to be creative in a way, but it also kind of gives us that sense of to get into the creative juices, just not for right now, but for later on too, where it's like, that, okay, if we're doing this creative stuff now, well, why stop later on when we get back to whatever the new normal is? And, you know, looking at all the possibilities, obviously we don't know whether we're going to be in or whether we're going to be in our homes working it. And it's just kind of the adaptability of being able to provide fans with the content that they want. And especially because there's going to be such high volume and just there's going to be such a huge audience viewing on everything we do because you finally have live sports back. And then it's going to be, how do we really cater to everyone to make sure that they're getting their fix of not just the games, but everything in between as well?
Well, there'll be plenty of time to chat about all the ins and outs of the NHL when we get it back. I'm curious, Cassie, we've been seeing different forms of entertainment to make, to replace, I guess, the spot of live sports. I would say that your Join the Movement initiative is right up there, because everybody's trying to find ways to stay in shape, engaged. I mean, what is your read on just how much this is taking off? I've gone from seeing you and I think it was Ben Heber, right, at the start, and now the amount of people that have joined on and are locked in on the bike or running, whatever it may be. I'd love to hear just your thoughts on how it started, first of all, and just how much this is taking off. Join the Movement on Instagram and on social media.
Yeah, it sort of just started out as this low-key thing with Ben, you know, Ben Hebert, who's a gold medal Olympic curler for Canada. And, you know, I him and I are friends, and I recognized that he just got a new Peloton. And I was like, hey, well, why don't we do rides together and keep each other motivated through this? And then, you know, we put it out on social media, Ben Hebert and I, and we sort of said, hey, if you have a Peloton, come join us. This is the ride we're going to do. And then Natalie Spooner, who plays for our national women's team, she's like, hey, Cass, how do I join this? And I was like, do you have a Peloton? She said, no, I have a stationary bike though. And I was like, okay, well, I'll FaceTime you into the ride. So we have this total ghetto setup in my basement where I FaceTime people into the ride that don't have Pelotons. And then I thought to myself, you know, I've recently gone back last year and I'm an advisor to our national women's team part-time. And I was like, this is a great way for me to check in with all the players and make sure they're okay. And so we started, you know, sort of with the leadership group and Brianne Jenner and Blair Turnbull and Mary-Philippe Poulin. And then we've kind of gotten into different groups. And then Roberto Luongo, he has a Peloton. So I texted him and I was like, hey, would you be interested in joining this ride? And he's like, sure. So he joined and absolutely killed everyone on the ride. It was unbelievable to see his score on the ride. And, then I reached out to Peter Hanlon with the Flames and I just said, hey, any of the guys have Pelotons? And he got back to me. There's, you know, a couple players that have them. And so Sean Monahan and Michael Stone came on and they same thing, they killed the ride. And I'm working on my last group of national women's team players. I'm calling it the kids group. So it's all the young kids that have made the team here for the first time. And, you know, we're just encouraging people to ride, run or walk, and you don't have to have a Peloton, but just, you know, we put out the time that we're going to work out at. And if you want to join it and come work out, we're just trying to inspire everyone to get active. But, you know, selfishly for me, it's been a great way for me to connect with the current national team players and just to kind of have fun. And I FaceTime them all into the rides and they're dying, which is great. It makes me kind of feel good that I'm not so unfit as I thought I was. And, you know, I think they're learning to appreciate that. But I had to take a week off last week because I was so exhausted from doing these rides and trying to push myself through with these young kids. But it's been fun and just low key. And, you know, we're just kind of having fun with it and it keeps us active as well.
How many Ks have you ridden so far? You're doing this often.
Yeah. Well, I was doing it twice a week and then I'm also doing some other stuff too. So I was like, gosh, I can't keep up. So we've kind of got it back to just once a week. And I know Dave Lowry and Elaine Lowry, they've reached out. Elaine is a good friend of mine and Dave, we all know. So she's qualified for the Boston Marathon.
She's a machine, yeah. 28
times or 32 times. So I'm a little nervous about that one, but they're going to come on here in the future. And I'm going to try to keep doing this until it's over. And it kind of gives me something to look forward to and it gives everyone else something to look forward to. And as long as I don't conflict with Ben Hebert's golf game, I think we're going to be good because he's full into the golf right now. And I got to make sure we schedule it the right amount of time.
Golf and Peloton. It's a good way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm curious because you talked about that recently kind of going back with the women's national team too in that role. I mean, what is you mentioned sort of the world championships earlier. What are you hearing from, you know, all the ladies as they're preparing, trying to stay in shape, the same type of thing, but that mental side of it for them. What are you hearing from all the women's hockey players right now?
You know, they're doing a really good job of keeping, you know, together, and you know they do Zoom yogas and they, you know, they try to do workouts together. And, but I think that's the hardest part is you're kind of isolated from your teammates, you know, and you're so used to showing up every day at the rink or at the gym and training together and pushing each other through and all those types of things. So, you know, you just kind of miss that environment. But I think initially when the Women's Worlds was canceled, it was kind of like, oh, you know, how serious is this? And, you know, it's always the women's sports that get canceled, this and that. And, And then all of a sudden you realize, holy smokes, this is serious. And obviously we all know people are losing their lives and that type of thing. But I think initially just getting over that disappointment, you know, they had a tough season. It was the first season where the Canadian Women's Hockey League was canceled and they boycotted the other league. And so there were so many unknowns. And then you look forward to the World Championship and then all of a sudden, bang, it's canceled. So a real difficult year for them. And I know they're just excited to potentially get back and be together more often and train. But they're doing a good job behind the scenes. I'm actually proud of them, how they've been able to come together and keep in touch with one another and kind of pull each other through what's a really tough time. I mean, it's a tough time in real life for sure. But as an athlete, when you're isolated from your teammates, it can be a real struggle. And, you know, so they're keeping each other through this and pushing each other through this. And I think that's important.
And on that note, how would you characterize the state of the women's game right now? As you kind of touched on there, so much was covered earlier in the year about the cancellation of the season and then the boycott. And what progress do you think has been made at this point? Where do you think this is headed?
Well, I truly believe, and I can almost say it for a matter of fact, we're going to have a WNHL. We're going to have a professional women's league that's associated with the NHL. Now, as to when that happens, I think there's a little bit of a question mark or gray area surrounding that. And of course, you know, COVID-19 didn't help. I mean, everything kind of gets pushed on the back burner. You know, the NHL is just trying to get back and get its clubs back playing. And, you know, there's so many things going on behind the scenes, but I truly believe they want a professional women's hockey league. And I truly believe they have the structure to help it be successful long-term. And, you know, I believe that's what the players are kind of fighting for. And it's not about salaries or anything like that. I think that's been one of the misperceptions, if you will, out there, that the PWHPA, which has all the top 200 players around the world, are fighting for salaries and money. And that, you know, that's not it at all. I think they're fighting for what they believe is a sustainable future for women's hockey, which we currently don't have. And I think, again, we've never had a professional women's hockey league. Like, even when I was part of the Canadian Women's Hockey League, we called ourselves professional, but we weren't professional. I mean, the expenses to these players were far beyond what they were actually getting paid. And the current system now with the NWHL is very similar. So, that's my fight. That's where I want to go, is to have a sustainable, professional, real professional women's hockey league, where they're not going to be making millions and millions of dollars, but it would be nice to make somewhat of a living, much like the lacrosse league we see, where they make, you know, kind of part-time wages, if you will, and then some of them have to have other careers, but at least it gives an opportunity to be paid and play at a high level.
Tori, I kind of want to get your thoughts on this too, because in addition to the fact that everybody here is obviously a hockey fan for the obvious reasons, and we work in the sport, but you're a big soccer fan too, and with all due respect, you bombard me with texts about the NWSL, yes, which is awesome because it's keeping me informed. Maybe I'm going to become a soccer fan. We'll see. Still to be determined. But regardless, it's really cool to see what their league's doing. And I'm curious to see from a fan's perspective, because that's the uniquely qualified position you're in to see it, how successful has it been in your eyes? And they do such an awesome job of engaging with their fans, don't they?
They do. Smaller leagues have to engage with their fans in a more one-on-one manner, just to build up that fan base and keep them there. And they've always done a good job with that. They had a ton of momentum coming off a Women's World Cup, and all of the women's national team players play in the NWSL, which also helps them. So they have the star power behind it. But what they unveiled this week is really unique, and I think sets kind of a framework for a lot of sports in 2020 if you want to play. They're going to have a month-long, it's called the Challenge Cup, where all the teams will go to Utah and stay a month there and play for the month to determine the championship, essentially. They're not ruling out playing in front of fans in the fall if that's safe. It's not likely, they admit that. So they needed this in place to keep that momentum rolling for their league and the sport. But they know that they need to have the safety mechanisms in place to have the players on board. And they were able to do that working with their players association. And I think most of the women's national team players have agreed to go, from what it sounds like, which is huge. They also offered athletes the ability to opt out of the season without affecting their contract status, and they would still be paid, which is a big thing in women's sports, because like Cassie said, they're not making millions. They need those salaries. It's their day-to-day job. So to be able to have that mechanism in place for this Challenge Cup is huge, and allows players to feel safe and secure within their league and not give up their career as an athlete. Maybe they have a family situation as well. If you have kids and you're not comfortable with being away for a month, then you're able to say, hey, I'm just going to take this year off and not lose that wage and not have to worry about your day-to-day life. So I think what they've done has allowed them to A, keep their league viable, because it is a smaller league. So money is not, you know, they don't have a ton of money just on an everyday basis. They need these seasons to maintain their cash flow. But it also keeps up momentum in terms of growing women's sports. And I think that they've been able to not only give women's sports a boost here with the framework they put in place for this tournament, but also give sports in general something to work with and go, hey, they already have all of this framework in place. We can take this and mold it to work for our sport as we work through this pandemic.
Well, Cassie, that's kind of a great segue, because if we look at that league and what a successful marketing effort can achieve, you know, if we look at a possible WNHL in the future, we know how that will obviously appeal to the elite athletes of the women's game. But how important is it to reach out and really focus on attracting the next generation of young girls to the sport?
Well, I think the infrastructure that the NHL has, the marketing is already there. And I know they're hearing it from their sponsors that their sponsors want women's hockey. They want women's hockey included in this. And I think also from the standpoint of just growing the game, obviously they don't just want little boys playing. They want little girls playing too, because those little girls end up becoming WNHL fans or NHL fans. And so they broaden their fan base. And I think that's been the big thing, you know, what you've seen with women's sports, and there's, it's a slow change here over the last 5 years where companies are saying, hey, we'll support you, but we have to have a female component to it. And that's partly because you're seeing more female leaders in high position roles within these companies, and partly because the companies are finally waking up and saying, this is a priority for us, that we can't just market to males anymore. We have to market to females. And so I know the NHL is getting some push from some of their companies that they deal with that, hey, let's move on this. What they're asked all the time, what's going on with women's hockey? Listen, the infrastructure is already there. This is just about adding a women's team to an already solid infrastructure. And, you know, so if we have a team in Boston, let's say, well, the infrastructure's there at TD Garden. If we have a team in Toronto, well, the infrastructure's there, whether it's at Scotiabank Arena or they play where the Marlies play. And so it's not about adding, you know, arenas and those types of things. It's about just adding the women's game under the NHL umbrella, which is already there. It's already kind of set in stone. And I think the women's game can help the NHL grow. And I think the NHL can help the women's game grow. So I think it's a good relationship that we're going to see in the future.
Cassie, when you were going through your playing career, I mean, I know that you faced a lot of the challenges head on, but when, at what point in your hockey career or your life did you always embrace, you know, sort of the role that you have right now? Or was there a time where, you know, it wasn't front and center as far as, you know, being an advocate and trying to pave that path, or like, do you remember a time where that sort of set in your mind, you know, that role might be something that you could take on?
Well, I think, unfortunately, I was kind of thrust into it. You know, the 97 World Championships was the last World Championships, if you will, before we became an Olympic sport that following year. And I was a young player at the time and an assistant captain on the team, and was sort of centered out, if you will, for, you know, I was an all-star defenseman that year heading into the Olympics, and was sort of the one that got all the marketing opportunities and sort of became the face, if you will. And so I kind of had no choice. You know, the people were coming to me. That was sort of the person they were coming to and asking the questions. And I kind of felt in my own mind that I couldn't say no to much, because it was, you know, helping women's hockey and helping it grow. And so, you know, the PR people, they say, hey, Cass, you don't have to do this. And I say, you know, I have to do this. I'm in a position where I'm given this opportunity, and I got to help the game grow. And then I think over the years, you know, more and more players started to get profile. And so then, you know, they were being asked these things. But I'll be honest with you, Brendan, like I didn't grow up with social media. So the amount of meetings I had to go to, whether at Hockey Canada with all their board members and, you know, all this stuff, people have no idea. It was just part of the role that I had to play. And then when you become captain, it even escalated even more. So, you know, I just tried to deal with it the best way I could. And to be honest with you, my first Olympics probably didn't handle it very well because it was a little bit overwhelming, and it probably affected, you know, my career on the ice. And then after that, realized that, you know, what I do on the ice is more important than anything, and kind of had that type of focus, and obviously matured as an athlete as I got older and figured out how to handle all the extracurricular stuff that I had to do, and learned how to say no, quite frankly, and learned that I didn't owe the women's game anything. I didn't have to be the one that had to break down every door. And that's the unique thing about that 2002 Olympic team is, you know, they really learned from the pioneers that played before us, who literally played for a t-shirt. And so they knew how to break down doors, and they knew how to fight behind the scenes, and they continue to give back to this day. And we just recently connected, all of us, on email, and it was so great to kind of hear from everyone. But I don't say, Brendan, I ever loved being the face, if you will, of women's hockey. There were so many aspects of it that I felt uncomfortable with, but that's the position I was put in, and I, you know, did the best job that I could. And but as far as fighting for things behind the scenes, that never changed, and it never will. And you know, I get an opportunity to sit in meetings with, you know, corporate people, and sit in meetings with the NHL, and you know, that's my role, is to push, and that's something I'll continue to do.
It's fascinating to hear you say that, because I feel like, you know, I think everyone's up, and the dream is obviously, in your case, it was to play hockey, and it's unbelievable. From my perspective, just looking at what you've done, I mean, I think we could all agree that you've done an incredible job, and should be praised for that. But it is fascinating to hear you talk about just, you know, you don't really have, you're in it, and you don't really make a conscious decision necessarily. But I kind of circle back to The Last Dance, and I don't know, I'm sure everyone's watched it in some form or another, but Michael Jordan getting kind of criticized for not taking political stances and things like that. But when you have that platform, you know, I guess at one point you do make a decision about whether or not you say yes to those things or no to those things. I just want to commend you for the work you've done, just because I know that wouldn't have been an easy spot at that point in your career, when I'm sure it was just about playing hockey. And one more thing about just those teammates and all those, the people that you went through it with. I mean, who do you all, you know, keep in touch with now, and kind of look back fondly on those hockey days? And, you know, I would imagine that camaraderie hasn't left in all forms.
Yeah. You know, there's a few of us that have FaceTimed and had a glass of wine or two, over this quarantine. You know, I always keep in touch with Vicky Sanahara. She's a great friend, probably my best friend on the team. And, you know, Kelly Bouchard, who lives here in Calgary, we text and keep in touch from time to time. And even just some of my non-national team teammates that I play with over the years, we keep in touch. But I would say Vicky Senard, Dana Hefford, you know, those probably are the two that I've been keeping in touch with the most over FaceTime. And you know, we just had an email with the 2002 team. And unfortunately, we lost a great supporter of our team over this last couple of weeks in Dan O'Neill, who was the CEO of Molson back when we played in 2002. And he supported every single member of the team. And then after we won, he walked into our dressing room and doubled that compensation. And so anyway, we just lost him. And so we had a chain of email going out, and we're putting together a little tribute video for him or his family. And we all were joking on email and sending things back and forth. And, you know, Isabelle Chartrand, who lives in France with her husband and her two kids, you know, it was great to catch up with her, and her husband's in hockey, he played hockey, and now they're moving back to Quebec. And, you know, just, you know, people you haven't talked to in years, and you just kind of pick up where you left off. And that's what makes that team in particular so special, because we really understood where women's hockey started and where it came from. And then to be able to beat the U.S. Dream Team and win one game out of nine and, you know, win the game that mattered the most, that was a pretty unique group. And you know, all of them are friends, and we try and keep in touch as much as we can, but sometimes it's hard just with life, you know?
So we have kind of a, I guess, a running theme on this podcast. It actually just started as a one episode thing, but it's turned into a fun thing that we've carried on with every guest. We've been talking about our favorite road trip stories or stories from our careers. For you, and we kind of went over, got a long list of accolades, you've literally been all over the world to do this. Is any one event or any particular story or something, life experience that happened to you, that sticks out in your career so far?
Well, I think being selected to the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee, and I'm not a Hockey Hall of Famer, but to be on that committee is amazing. And That was a pretty surreal moment walking into that room last year for the first time. And I can't tell you much about it, unfortunately, but it was, you know, to be accepted amongst that group of great men and great hockey minds in hockey, and everyone coming up and shaking my hand and welcoming me. That was really special. And, you know, I also was part of the very first ever hockey ops trip to Afghanistan, actually. And this was back in, oh, the Christmas, I think, of 2004, 2005. And that was really neat to go to Afghanistan and to visit our soldiers and to see what was going on. And it was about a month before our first soldier was actually killed over there. And just to see the conditions with which these people were living, and to, you know, we all love our soldiers and we all understand that they're the real heroes in our country. But when you get to meet them and see them in action and see the dangers, and so that was really an incredible experience. And I went over there with Kirk McLean and Tiger Williams, which was a treat. And but we just had a fabulous time and were treated so well. And again, just to be that close with real life stuff and to see that part of the world, it was really interesting. So I've been fortunate to have a bunch of things that I've had through hockey. And I feel like I kind of owe a lot to hockey. So I'll always kind of keep pushing for women's hockey in particular behind the scenes.
That's awesome. Did you guys get to play a game in Afghanistan of some sort too, or was it just a visit?
Well, we actually stopped in Bosnia. We went to Bosnia actually too, and we went to Dubai. Like, it was just an amazing trip. And we actually played a game against the soldiers in Bosnia and our Canadian soldiers. And it got pretty intense. So you can imagine with Tiger Williams, right? I was glad he was on my team, but it got pretty intense. I mean, it was a big deal, right? And so we did play, but and then we had a little exhibition game on the base in Afghanistan, which was really cool too. And it was a little less intense because I think there were more dignitary people around, but nonetheless, it's hockey, and it was Canada over in Afghanistan, so it still was pretty intense.
That's awesome. Cassie, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate joining us today, and all the best. We hope that we can see you again soon. We still don't know what that timeline looks like, but at least we have a plan in place where maybe that'll happen at some point this summer. Thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, great to see you guys all. Take care.
Good stuff. Thank you, fans, for listening to the Firestarter Podcast. We'll catch you next week.